SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two, at the races off of a fun conversation. Tom Amos, and I always end up going over time with Amos, because you can ask him anything. You can throw any curveball past him to him, and he'll double off the wall. So the topic about MTOs and just everything, trying to figure out how to get a horse to get up at the wire when they've established a history of kind of running up to leaders and not going by. It can be very maddening for, it's tough enough for those of us that are betting. Think about being an owner and a trainer of that kind of horse. John White undoubtedly has had a couple of horses that he's chased over the years that wouldn't go by. John, who can you think of that might fit in that? I always use Perfect Drift as the poster horse for that.
Well, I think Perfect Drift is a very good example of that. Certainly he would be one that would come to mind for me as well. But you know what? Perfect Drift actually became one of my favorites and certainly earned a lot of money and made frequent Breeders' Cup appearances.
Absolutely. And then they had him at Churchill as the by the museum in the paddock by the Derby Museum, and he was not an ideal candidate for that. He was, because he was not all that charming or friendly. So I think they swapped him out. Somebody else came into that role. John, you're open for business at Santa Anita the autumn season. Got off to a good start, and we can talk about the stakes. We can talk about the maiden winners that feel like they're going to be prominent. And then, of course, there's those stewards that always seem to interject themselves onto the racing scene.
Well, I know that having been a steward myself, and I mean, but the vast majority of stewards would just as soon not get involved, believe me. That's certainly my philosophy whenever I show up for a race card, is I like to hope for a nice, clean, safe, quiet day of racing. And I think the majority of fellow stewards are in that boat. It was kind of tough for opening day at Santa Anita that the stewards had a couple of disqualifications, but that's going to happen.
What was your thoughts on particularly the Drayden Van Dyke scenario, where all he's doing is closing up the potential hole on the rail? He's clear, and while we discussed previously, what transpired with Monomoy Girl and Midnight Bisou, it's one thing to tighten up a horse, with a move and either dare them to go inside or, not allow them. And it's different when you then go out in the other direction subsequently. For the purposes of this discussion, that Van Dyke did what every serious rider would have done in the same situation, and that is to basically not allow somebody to come up inside you up the rail.
Well, I will say this. I feel that certainly racing is conducted differently today than it was years ago, when jockeys really did not. It was incumbent upon them not to let guys pass them on the inside. I mean, that was kind of an unwritten rule that they would come back and really get chewed out if that happened.
Exactly.
But in this particular case, I think the big difference between this and the Cotillion is And I went back this morning and looked at it again because I will tell you, one thing that always makes me nervous a little bit when I've been a steward, you make a disqualification, and, well, I'm going to tell you, the next morning, you really hope that it still looks the same to you as it did, you know, under the hubbub of making the decision the day before. It's sort of like the morning line. A lot of times I'll make, you know, I've already had to send in Thursday's morning line. Well, I can tell you, when we get to Thursday morning, sometimes I'll look and I'll go, why did I do that? I mean, when I had to send it, I had to do the work Sunday night and send it in Monday morning. By the time you get all the way to Thursday, I mean, a race can look differently to you. I mean, handicappers know that. I mean, that it, just from the difference when you handicap the night before to the next day, sometimes when you take a fresh look at a race, you go, you know, you see it differently. But when I went back and looked at this race again this morning, because I knew that you wanted to talk about it, the big difference here is I don't think he was clear. And I think that's the key element here. You know, the first of all, was there enough, you know, of a space? And there was, because the horse on the lead did drift out quite a bit and left a very sizable hole there on the inside. And when the stewards were showing this, and again, California was the first jurisdiction, was the trailblazer, to show the stewards replays during an inquiry. California was the first jurisdiction to do that. And it's certainly always nice to be able to look along with the stewards while they're deliberating. And but that pan, you know, to me, DeSormo got, there, you know, at the cotillion, Monomoy Grill was a length and a quarter in front when she came over to me in upper stretch. There's no length and a quarter here. There's no space. If you stop it, there's not space at all. In fact, I think the DeSormo's up within the hind end there at the time that, and he actually brushes the rail. I mean, when it gets tightened up on him, so. To me, and I understand what you're saying about Van Dyke, I just think he did it a little too late. In other words, you know, I think he needed to close that door earlier than he did to avoid having his number taken down. So, and you know, you were saying about how trainers, every trainer would applaud him for that. Well, one ex-trainer was watching it while I was watching it, because I was happened to be watching TVG, and Simon Bray felt that the number should come down. So there's an ex-trainer right there that felt that that was a good call.
Well, he might have been putting himself in the position of the horse that was behind.
Yeah. So, but I mean, like I say, I think it was. And it isn't that I'm shy to disagree with calls. As you know, in fact, we had quite a few at Saratoga that you brought up to me where I was scratching my head, and I still scratch my head over the McKenzie takedown to me because I thought it was offsetting penalties in the San Felipe earlier this year. I think they kind of dropped the ball on that one myself. So it isn't that I won't disagree with a disqualification or a non-disqualification, but in this particular case, to me, I thought it was pretty clear that, you know, it's the same thing, and I just said this, I think, on your show last week, that this is the thing that I have preached to these jockeys the next morning when they come in, and then you have to go over this with the films to determine if there's going to be a penalty. But I preach to these jockeys time and time and time and time again, the more you stay straight, the less trouble you're going to get into. I mean, and that's the same thing in the cotillion. I mean, if Monomoy Girl runs straight, she wouldn't have been DQ'd. Now, she might not have won because Midnight Bezu, to me, quite probably, but at least possibly, would have gone by her. So, like I say, anytime you start deviating from your path, you raise the prospect of having your number taken down. And Van Dyke just kept coming over, you know, he just wasn't clear to me. The pan shows that he just wasn't clear.
There's another. Okay, that's another view of it. I appreciate it. Let's talk some of the racing specifics and what you took away. And let's start with the awesome again, John, because I do get the sense there's some people that watched Accelerate and thought, okay, he won, he ran okay, and you know, then there's the West Coast matter that, you know, feels like that could be a very useful first step back toward the Classic. What was your impressions?
Well, it's a mixed bag for Accelerate, and I think this is a race that certainly isn't going to scare anybody from taking him on at Churchill, particularly from the standpoint that the one time he is shipped this year, he got beat. On the other hand, to his credit, I mean, he overcame a lot here to win this race, and he didn't win it by in a photo. I mean, he won it by 2.5 lengths here, 2.25 lengths. And I still chuckle at Accelerate. You know, people tend to pigeonhole these horses and characterize them as this or that. And Accelerate, prior to this year, had really been felt by people that would talk about him as a horse that didn't want to go 1.25 miles. I mean, they talked about him like, you know, he a mile, maybe 1.125 miles, you know, fine, up to 1.125 miles, but beyond 1.125 miles, people just felt like, you know, that's really not his deal, particularly when he finished a well-beaten third behind Collecting and Arrogate in the Pacific Classic. That really fueled that. And then he comes into this year at the age of 5 and has really matured and has really reached peak form, and he wins 3 races at 1.25 miles to really prove he's flipped it from a horse that maybe wasn't all that good at 1.25 miles to he's, you know, one of the best in the country at 1.25 miles, and 1.25 miles really kind of swings it to his advantage. And that's one thing about the Breeders' Cup Classic is going to be a plus for him to me, is the fact that he's so proven at 1.25 miles. And we've talked about that for the Kentucky Derby time and time again, and that is the huge difference between 1.125 miles and 1.25 miles. So, you know, at least that's not a concern for him. And he backed up to 1.125 miles. And Sadler, you know, his interview with you was very interesting and very informative from the standpoint that Sadler, you know, really, I think, trained him in such a manner for this race that he was trying to leave something in the tank for the big race, which is the most important one of the year and for his career in the Breeders' Cup Classic. And I mean, that makes sense. I mean, you don't want to have him completely, you know, the screws completely tightened for this race when the big is next. And sure. You know, Sadler's not stupid. He understands that. And you know, when it didn't, no one really knew about West Coast showing up in this race till the last minute. And Sadler has said that he might have trained him a little harder if he'd known he had to run against West Coast. So that you, I think you have to take that into consideration. And then when you consider the fit he threw at the gate. Now, he can't afford to be doing that kind of stuff in the Classic, for sure. I mean, he can't go to the gate, throw a fit before he goes in, you know, balk at the gate, then throw a fit in the gate and come out of the gate, you know, not that good, and race wide like he did. I mean, you can't do all that at the field he's going to face in the Breeders' Cup and win. So, I mean, he, you know, that's troubling because, you know, if he were to do it, any of those things again, it very likely would cost him the victory. So, but he's an awfully good horse. I mean, there's just no getting around it. I mean, he's almost 6-for-6 this year, other than the neck loss at Oakland to a very good horse in City of Light. I mean, he's not been beaten this year, and he beat a top-class horse in West Coast. Now, Baffert made it clear before the race that West Coast wasn't at his absolute best, and that's obvious since he hadn't run since March, but we know Baffert can have a horse ready to win a race without having run since March, because he did it last year in the Awesome again with Buttigieg, and then he did it again in the Pennsylvania Derby with McKenzie. But the problem for West Coast was he was having to face a top horse and Accelerate. And West Coast, you put the nail. It's one reason I like to listen to your recap, Steve, at the start of each Monday, because your review of the weekend's races is very good. I mean, you have a very good eye for these races, And you are absolutely right, to me, that West Coast looked like he was, you know, out of horse on the far turn. So it's really to his credit that he fought on to finish second in that race. And it's a race he really should move up substantially from in the Breeders' Cup. It makes him a big-time threat in the Breeders' Cup Classic. My concern, and I'm a big West Coast fan, I loved him in the Travers last year at 6-1. And, you know, then he won the Pennsylvania Derby. But the problem for me a little bit is this fact that he's lost four in a row now at this stage of his career. And, you know, that's the bad news. The good news is he's, you know, two of those losses were to the Horse of the Year, Gunrunner, who, you know, just was basically unbeatable the second half of last year. Well, not basically, he was. He was unbeatable the second half of last year. And but, I, you know, this West Coast, to me, it could go either way. I could see him running well and hitting the board in the Breeders' Cup Classic, or he's the type that maybe will, as I say, really move up off of this race. I mean, he could come up with an explosive performance, perhaps, in the Breeders' Cup Classic. So, you know, he's very dangerous in the Breeders' Cup, but I could also see to where he'd be the type that would maybe run well and finish second or third. I was disappointed with him a little bit last year. Not so much that he didn't win the Breeders' Cup Classic, and he was my pick in the race, and I bet him in the race, but I thought he should have finished second. He really just kind of left me a little disappointed in him that Collected was able to beat him and beat him by a length and a quarter for the place. So West Coast has kind of got some mixed signals to me going into the Breeders' Cup Classic. But Accelerate, you know, there's going to be a lot of people taking a stand against him off of this race, and because of the fact that he lost when he shipped this year, and off of the fact that Sadler hasn't won a Breeders' Cup, and the fact that Sadler's record when he ships, you know, is not the best that you'd ever want to see. So there are concerns here for Accelerate. I'm certainly rooting for John Sadler. I mean, if Accelerate doesn't win the Classic, the one horse I really hope kind of wins for him to get the Breeders' Cup monkey off his back is Catalina Cruiser in the Dirt Mile, because it's like Bobby Frankel when Frankel was 0 for 37 in the Breeders' Cup, and I happened to love the horse that broke that streak for Frankel, and that was Squirtle Squirt, who broke from the rail with Jerry Bailey. But, you know, that was one of those situations, Steve, where if you went through the past performances of Squirtle Squirt and circled where he was at the 6-furlong point in every one of his races, his record suddenly looked tremendous. And it was clouded by a lot of these 7-furlong races and races at other distances. And I really felt Squirtle Squirt was really a big time. I loved him in that race, quite frankly. And he got the job done to get that Breeders' Cup monkey off of Frankel's back, and then Frankel would go on to win numerous Breeders' Cups. And I sure would like to see John Sadler be able to win a Breeders' Cup, considering, you know, that's such a big blotch on his resume, and he's such a good guy and such a good trainer. And, you know, I really appreciate the class that Sadler shows, that when he's been asked about this Breeders' Cup, you know, he's handled it, you know, with real poise. That he compares himself to Susan Lucci, who finally won an Emmy and that type of thing. And I mean, he's handled it really well, because you know it's got to really eat him up alive. As competitive as Sadler is, you couldn't survive on this tough Southern California circuit and do as well as Sadler has all these years if you didn't have an intense competitive nature. Sadler certainly does. So the fact that he hasn't won a Breeders' Cup, you know, has got to be eating him up inside.
Well, Christophe Clément hasn't won one.
Yeah, that's right.
Who
I consider to be one of the finest trainers in my lifetime, to be honest. I think that guy is just tremendous.
Of course. There's a lot of anomalies in when it comes to these kinds of records, and I remember in the early days when I had just started Derby Trail, I wrote a piece. It might have even been leading up to Squirtle Squirt's win at Belmont. I wrote a piece because it was at the point where Frankel was over 33, so it might have been the year before, and I went through the starters, the 33 starters, and listed them by their odds. And based on the seconds, the thirds, and the fourths, at what odds Frankel's Breeders' Cup starters had been, the argument could be made when he was over 33 that he had outperformed his expectations, because there was a huge bunch of them that were big double-digit long shots that ran very well. Honest Lady, throw Honest Lady in their faces. It was a preposterous, you know, taint on Frankel at the time, because anybody who actually looked, the same could be said when Todd Pletcher was looking for his first Derby.
Exactly. And even going to bring that up, because you have brought that up from time to time, and it's a perfect parallel, no question about it. I mean, not only were the Pletcher horses exceeding, you know, overachieving actually in the race,
yes,
where he's getting knocked for not having won the race, but then there's the times Pletcher was, record's been hampered by the fact he would run horses against himself. So, I mean, you know, where it does increase your chances to win the race if you got more than one in there, but when you take a look at his total record in the race, too, you know, only one horse can win the race. So, but your point in terms of the prices of these horses is very, very important. I mean, very important. But people don't usually take the time to do this. They just go, oh, he's 0 for whatever, you know, whatever. And like I say, I know that Sadler, it's a sore point. It's got to be a sore point with the guy. And yet, you know, just, and it's going to, I would like to take the, whatever the over and under is on how many times between now and the Breeders' Cup, Sadler's going to be asked about the fact that he hasn't won a Breeders' Cup race. I would have to take the overs on whatever the number would be, the poor guy, because he's going to get peppered by it, and he knows it. And like I say, he doesn't snap at you. He doesn't, I don't want to talk about that or whatever. I mean, he's just handling it, to me, as well as you possibly can for someone who, as I say, I know, have known for over 30 years. I know how competitive he is. I know how much it would mean to him to win a Breeders' Cup. And that it would be wonderful if he got to that Classic and that monkey was already taken off his back before he even got to the Classic.
John, a couple of thoughts. I got to get to Mike McCarthy, but a couple of quick hits. The two-year-old races, some thoughts?
Well, this game winner, I mean, boy, there's a lot to like there. There's no question about it. And to earn the 97 buyer, best by a two-year-old this year, and the way he did it. And, you know, I think Gunmetal Gray is a very good horse. I thought Gunmetal Gray could possibly win that race. I thought he would possibly could give game winner all he wanted. And I think Gunmetal Gray ran well, and he galloped out well. So Jay Pribman pointed that out in his Kentucky Derby recap. I love those that Jay does. He does such a tremendous job with those Kentucky Derby capsules of these races on the road to the Kentucky Derby. But this game winner, I mean, he, to me, looms the one to beat in the Breeders' Cup juvenile for sure at this point, and could be very, you know, big for next year, considering the way he wins and the way he finishes. You know, this stretching out to two turns just really seemed to suit him beautifully, and looks like the farther they go, Baffert has said it, he's a big colt that can take a lot of training and take a lot, and so there's a lot to like there. And then, you know, Bellafina, to me, I mean, that so much was made of how slow she came home in the Del Mar debutante, but that there is no question to me that track was funky that day. I mean, it wasn't her. I mean, she'd earned a really good buyer in her career debut, a 90-plus, and then, you know, dipped way down there in the Del Mar debutante. I mean, it isn't like that all of a sudden a very good filly suddenly couldn't run. I mean, and it just, you could see they were struggling visually. I mean, it looked like it. They were all looked like they were tired coming down the lane. And I think people knocked those Phillies too much for that. And, you know, she went back up in the buyer department for this race and certainly was much more visually impressive, I thought. And so I think Simon Callahan certainly got one of the two-year-old Phillies for this race, along with the one that won by a city block for Tom Amos there in the Pocahontas. And you got Michael McCarthy coming on next. You know, he's another one of those guys I can't help but root for. He's such a class guy, and, you know, he spent all that time as an assistant to Todd Pletcher and then branched out on his own. And, you know, it took him a little while to get kind of his stable rolling, but, boy, Michael's had a very good year this year. I'm so pleased to see it. I'll always remember at the 2006 Breeders' Cup when I was at Churchill for HRTV, and Michael one morning just took the time to take me and give me a tour of all the Pletcher horses that they had there. And that's the kind of thing you just don't forget. It was very kind of him to do that. And he would give, say, this one we liked about this and whatever. And it was, he does such a good job. And, you know, that Liam the Charmer, that was very apropos for that one to win. By the way, I thought it was apropos for Accelerate to win the Awesome Again, since he's a grandson of Awesome Again. I thought it was apropos for Baffert to win the American Pharoah, since Baffert trained American Pharoah. And I certainly thought it was apropos for Liam the Charmer to win the John Henry Turf Championship, considering he was bred by Ron and Debbie McAnally. And of course, it was Ron McAnally who trained the great John Henry. And I absolutely loved when you and John DeSantis were talking about John Henry, and DeSantis was talking about how long it would take John Henry to get from the McAnally barn to the track. And DeSantis was absolutely spot on that. That was during my reporter days for the Racing Forum, and I would have to usually go to about 10 to 15 different barns to get information for my column and for the stakes advances we were having to write for the Racing Forum and so forth. And I would be crisscrossing all through the barn area at Santa Anita or Hollywood Park in the morning, and I would encounter Louis Santacola and John Henry about anywhere from 5 to 10 different times as he would take all that time to get to the racetrack. And I would say to Louis, "Louis, are you ever going to get to that racetrack?" And he'd say, "Don't worry, Pappy will get me there," you know. And I mean, that was just such a memory that Johnny D brought back to me for that. And but how great that for Michael McCarthy, for Liam the Charmer to get this graded stakes win. How great for Ron McAnally to breed that one. And then the groom, which I'm sure Michael McCarthy will bring up, the groom of John Henry, they said, is the groom for this horse, too. So, I mean, these are just wonderful stories, and that was kind of a nice icing on the cake for a very good opening week at Santa Anita.
Very much. Well, John, we got another big weekend coming, and even before that, two races in the Stronach Pick 5 on Friday from Santa Anita, and we'll look forward to looking at the L.A. Woman, and we got the holiday Monday coming, Columbus Day on Monday, and so we'll connect next Tuesday, and we'll be that much closer, and we'll start to really start to sharpen the pencil, start to break those Johnny D. eggs toward Breeders' Cup. We got to break the eggs. We'll look for it. I appreciate it, John.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
John White, everybody. And Michael McCarthy is going to join us next. We'll talk to him about Liam the Charmer and Paved. A very good weekend for the barn with the John Henry win and the Grade 1 placing. Jerry Hollendorfer going to roll through. Andy Serling. Dick Powell. So a lot to do between now and noon. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Full card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit DRF.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
This is a house that Jack built, y'all. Remember this house? This was some land that he worked by hand. Yeah. It was the dream of an upright man. There was a room that was filled with love. Yeah. It was a love that I was proud of.
We're back at the races, 15 to the top of the hour, and happy to bring Michael McCarthy back for everybody. And the latest star emerging from the McCarthy barn, Liam the Charmer, the John Henry on Sunday in a race that just was dripping with history and amazing from every angle. John Henry was represented in equine and in human form. Michael McCarthy joins us. Congratulations.
Thank you guys for having me.
Not at all. And it was a great weekend for you, and there's a lot of good things happening, and we'll get to as much as we can. Let's start with Liam the Charmer and this performance, because Tyler Gaffalione gets aboard, and this finish, I mean, at the top of the stretch, Michael, he wouldn't have given you 10 cents for his chances, and he came flying.
Yeah, both horse and rider complement each other. He's a horse that really doesn't show his hand in the morning, but in the afternoons he sort of turns his game up a little bit. This new turf course here has got everything going a little bit quicker than usual. I think we set a track record down the hill earlier in the week. Maiden claimers are running very, very fast at sub 34 miles. So I was a little bit concerned about him getting farther back than I would have liked, but Tyler was able to keep him comfortably near the pace, and when he came with his run, he leveled off nicely and caught a very good horse, and Ashley Loves Sugar.
You know, he did go favored, and just by, you know, by a dime over Ashley Loves Sugar. So not a secret, per se, or you know, a revelation. He was also graded stake placed, but what's got to be addressed is it was really only his second start in a year. And maybe you have, maybe you probably have noticed, you are building some really enviable second off the layoff stats, Michael. You came in 5 wins in 15 with a $5.53 ROI with second off the layoff. So kind of an old school stat when looking at McCarthy runners.
Yeah, you know, I think it was one of those deals with him where he had had nearly a year off. I think it's like 363 days or something like that. I'm not sure if it's the way we train here that we seem to fire a little bit better second time out. You know, a little bit of that is a function of we don't have a whole lot of numbers, so we've got to kind of take it a little easy here and kind of get them racing into fitness. And luckily enough, it only takes us one race to do that, I guess. But the horses are kind of speaking for themselves lately. They've been training well. I thought we had a very, very solid Del Mar. A little quiet here later on in the summer with Los Alamitos. Didn't have a whole lot of starters there, but I think we've got some horses here at Santa Anita ready to run.
That's evident. We'll talk about more of them. Let's dive into his development. And, you know, you weren't afraid once he broke his maiden going back to spring of 2016, you went ahead and you tried him in Stakes Company, and he rewarded you with a placement right away. You went down to Del Mar that summer, and he ran a very good race in the La Jolla that probably didn't get noticed, and then he needed some more time off, one start between August and February, and then what we just talked about. So, you know, he's a gelding, so there's been some things that have interrupted him, but here he is as a mature five-year-old, and you know, a grade two winner. Give us a little bit of the perspective from, you know, this slow, steady development, because it's really a picture of how you want a horse to improve with age.
Yeah, you know, one look at him and you can tell he's not a fast horse. You know, he's big, heavy shoulder, nice hip on him. I mean, he looks like a true turf horse, so with his pedigree, Smart Strike out of a Giants Causeway Mare, I thought it was best just to go ahead and kind of take our time with him. I didn't think sprinting him would do us any good. We ran him one time on the dirt just to get a race under his belt, always knowing that he'd like to get to the grass. You know, came to him pretty quickly. After he broke his maiden, no secret, he was probably pretty useful. So we tried him, I believe it was the Rainbow Stakes or something like that. Just came up short that day. I think he was beaten by Mr. Rory. So he's a horse we've always had high hopes for. He's had some daggling issues along the way. Some of these deeper surfaces we've had out here in the last year on the dirt and stuff like that haven't been to his liking. And he struggles with the training over this deep racetrack. But the year has done him good. He is probably a year and a half later than I would have liked to have had. I thought the day he was just narrowly beaten in the Charlene Whittingham, I thought he should have been on saddle that day. That was a tough one to swallow. But, you know, we gave him a little bit of time. He obviously went to New Jersey, ran in the United Nations, did not do any good there. Came back, made a start at Del Mar, just was tailing off in form, so we decided to go ahead and give him some time. He was sold in the interim at the Keeneland November sale, was bought by Saul Cuban, Matiket Stables, on behalf of Bradley Weisbord. And they were nice enough to just go ahead and let him come along at his own pace, and it took a while, but we're reaping the rewards here on Sunday.
Well, and when he was bought, it was with the thought that he was going to be a good horse. He was a $500,000 purchase. The warrants had him, and you trained right from the get-go, and so it really has got to be. You got to be appreciative that you had the chance to get him back after the bloodstock sale in November, and you know are able to follow through and reap the reward of all the work that went into him.
Sure, I was sad to see him go when they told me they were going to sell him. I certainly understood the prior owner, their situation. The horse needed an extended amount of time. When the horse did go through the ring or was on his way through the ring, Bradley Weisbord called me and asked me about the horse, and didn't have a whole lot to say other than that I would like to train him if he was able to go ahead and purchase it. Lo and behold, he got lucky, bought him for $100,000, came back to us. And we're very, very grateful.
Two for two, and now a grade two winner. What do you look at going forward?
You know, there's plenty of options here. Obviously, the Breeders' Cup would be at the forefront of everybody's mind in the fall of the year. It would be a big step up, but a mile and a half is going to be well within this horse's scope. Third race off of a layoff. And I think he would really, really like the Churchill Downs Turf Course. Obviously, it's a world-class event. Best from multiple continents coming there on the day. So we'll see how he goes here over the next couple of weeks. And if we end up in Kentucky, that's great. Or if we have to reroute, head to Del Mar or somewhere like that in the fall, we'll do that. But of course, it's in great order.
Well, gosh, it would be so much fun. I'm sure Saul Kuhlman would love to get you know, at least one horse into the Breeders' Cup, or well, at least one horse with.
I'm sure he's going to have a lot with, more.
I can never resist those. They're laying out there like clay pigeons. It was an amazing scene too that we got to talk about. When did you latch on with to have Jose Mercado join your outfit?
Jose's been with us for not quite a year now. Wonderful man. He's a last of a breed of horsemen that we don't see too much around here anymore. Pretty amazing thing about him is that he's groomed horses all of his life. Jose has, and he's got three sons. One's a school teacher, one's a lawyer, and one's a gynecologist. So to be able to go ahead, put three kids through school while working here at the racetrack and having them go on have successful professional careers is, I think, maybe even a better accomplishment than rubbing John Henry.
It was, that's really, really nice. And you could see he was delighted with the whole scenario that unfolded, bred by the McAnally's, the trophy presented by Donna Senicola, Louis' widow. I mean, it really, that was a confluence of things that just, you can't make it up.
No, that was nice. You know, those things rarely work out the way they're supposed to, but in this particular scenario, it did, and I was certainly happy to have Jose there with us.
Well, this was really just part of a tremendous weekend and really a what continues to be a magical year, Michael. I mean, we've talked probably almost half a dozen times. Let's talk about the placements going back to Saturday as well. And, of course, you did also win that maiden claimer on the day, Lucky Soul. Saturday, Paved did everything but win. And, you know, she was going to have to fight to get a placement, considering the way Basilica is going, and of course Cambodia in there, and you know you had to figure at best she's the third choice, and I thought she ran a dynamite race to be second behind a streaking Basilica.
Yeah, you know, I was so disappointed her last two races. I don't think we've seen the real Pave. I guess in my heart of hearts, I didn't think she could run worse than 1-2-3 in the Belmont Oaks. Got a little bit shuffled farther back than we would have liked. Came with a nice run that day, but beaten 3.5 lengths, 3.25 lengths, something like that. Took her down to Del Mar. I thought she trained equally as well for the Del Mar Oaks as she did for the Belmont Oaks. Was in a perfect spot. Never really got out of third gear from the 3/8 pull to the wire. A little bit of a head scratcher because she had been training so well. Brought her up here and she just continued to go ahead and thrive. It's a turf course she's familiar with, and I think we saw the real Paved here on Saturday. Couldn't have been happier with her. Obviously, a win would have been great, but to get grade one placing as a 3-year-old against the Olders going a mile and a quarter certainly sets us up for some bigger and better things next year.
There's some opportunities. I mean, are you going to ease off her now for the maybe a matriarch look, perhaps?
you know, we'll see what kind of unfolds here over the next 3, 4, 5 weeks. Breeders' Cup Filly Mare Turf is a mile and 3/8, and there's no doubt in my mind that she would like a trip like that. British Champions Day is coming up, so I think some of the better European horses will probably go that way. We would get a little bit of a break in the weights if we chose to go that route. But the Matriarch is in play. Breeders' Cup Filly Mare Turf is in play. She doesn't seem like a filly that needs to be rested. She's had plenty of time in between races, so she's pretty fresh. And by what I can tell here out of this race, she's ready for another one.
Very nice. Well, there were a few other placements, not just on Saturday with Paved, but Vibrance. You have to be thrilled to get Grade One Black Type for Vibrance in that setting, behind even a half a dozen lengths behind Bellafina. That was a nice effort.
Yeah, I was really, really happy for that filly. I loved her as a yearling. It's always nice to see something you have a little hand in at the yearling sales, and you see something like that and get to watch them progress. And, I was a little disappointed first time out when she ran poorly on the tour, on the turf, but not to her fault that day. She was out wide, kind of half ran off, and wasn't much of a learning experience for her. And second time out, mild dirt at Del Mar. I thought she did everything right. At this time of year, allowance races don't fill easily for two-year-old types, especially going long, so the Chandelier was really the only thing that made some sense. Obviously, we got lucky with this scratch of Mother, but there were still four other very good fillies in the race. I wasn't crazy when they threw up the 22-3 opening quarter and we were prompting the pace, but filly was very game, hung on till the end and ran second to probably what's the best two-year-old filly in the country in Bellafina.
Well, and what do you do with her next?
Very good question. Seems like she's bounced out of that race pretty well. I have to think, barring anything crazy that happens this weekend in New York, we take her to Kentucky for the Breeders' Cup as well.
Look at you. Well, and that's got to please the little general. Speaking of Eclipse and Aaron Wellman, the news yesterday, Tappert officially retired. And so the next, always looking for the next big thing, and there's quite a few candidates, obviously, and here's another one that we discussed, and I'm not going to let you go without talking about the horse that is maybe the most under-the-radar candidate for the Breeders' Cup Classic, and that's Axelrod, who everybody's impressed and cooing over McKenzie, and rightly so. Axelrod ran a very sneaky good race. You sent him back-to-back to Philadelphia, not a surface that every horse loves, and he made the most of the opportunities.
It was nice. We had a race over the track there in the Smarty Jones. Horse definitely was feeling his oats when we got back there. He was a handful every day. Race set up nicely for him. We got some pace to run into. McKenzie certainly got the jump on him. We tried him once or twice through the lane, but we're never able to get there. There's certainly no disgrace running second to what could be the best three-year-old in the country that's still standing, really. So we'll go ahead and kind of maybe think about the Clark at Churchill, maybe think about the Breeders' Cup Classic. Unfortunately, he's not Breeders' Cup nominated, so that's a pretty penny to go ahead and get him nominated for something like that. But from what I can tell, looking at him here walking out to the racetrack, he's in very good shape.
Well, that's interesting. He's a Warrior's Reward. Yeah, there's a lesson here somewhere about your foals and going ahead and paying the really nominal price. Now, of course, he was sold at auction. It's not like he's a homebred, but it really behooves everybody. You can get your weanling Breeders' Cup eligible, for their entire careers for tiny money. So, and in fact, that deadline actually is coming up for your 2018 foals. Let me ask you, we'll see about what happens with Axelrod. I was really impressed, and I thought that his performance went very much under the radar. You also have got a maiden winner that I'm curious where Lady Dude is headed, because there's something there. Don Disney with a first dude homebred, and that came at the end of Del Mar. What's next for her?
You know, I'm not sure what's next for Lady Dude. I had her here. I was pointing her towards the Enochia Stakes, and we had a little difference in opinions as far as to where that filly would make her next start. So where she runs next is a very good question, because she's no longer under my shed row. But
really?
I wish them luck. Yes.
Wow. Did that spell the end of a relationship with Don Disney?
I don't know. Maybe it does. But I wish them the best of luck. Wherever she ends up is fine with me.
Very good. All right. And, of course, no visit is complete without an update on Oiseau de Guerre, the who you've really, he is what he is, but managed to get some nice efforts out of Oiseau.
Yeah, he seems like he really enjoys running down this hill here at Santa Anita, maybe even more so enjoys running second. I thought he came with a good run here the other day and just missed getting there in time. Who knows? Maybe he jumps up and is able to go ahead and get through this condition here before the meet ends and find a race out there with his name on it. But he's obviously got some ability, but he's having a hard time finding the winner's circle.
Yeah, well, one of the funniest storylines the last couple of years, Oiseau de Guerre. I'm going to also ask you about an obscure horse, because people are going to play the Stronach 5, Michael, on Friday, and you might help people with Imperial Creed, who gets a first try on the dirt. After, you tested him against some serious, maiden special company, going a mile on the grass at Del Mar, then the juvenile turf try, and the Jimmy Creed filly comes back for a tag on the dirt on Friday in the third.
Yeah, I didn't think she was fast enough to make any noise sprinting. Obviously ran her first time out, going a mile on the grass. Ran respectable enough for a first-time starter. Coming towards the end of the meet at Del Mar, she had a bad entry date, was not going to get in another maiden special lead on the grass. The only other option was to run her in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Del Mar Turf or something of that sort. So we went ahead and entered up in there. I mean, outside of the filly at Tom Proctor's, everybody was kind of in the same boat. She ran a respectable seventh or eighth that day, but I think this is where she belongs. She's found the right level here this week.
Well, that might help people that are looking to kick off their Stronach 5. Well, it's obviously been a magical year, Michael, and things continue to go forward nicely. Before we wrap up, gotta check in moving toward Breeders' Cup and the Dirt Mile, and give us an update on City of Light.
Couldn't be happier with the way he's training. I thought he had a wonderful 5/8 here the other day, minute 2/5, with a super strong gallop out. He is showing me that he's no worse for wear out of his 4-go effort. Obviously disappointed not to win that day, but I thought the horse ran a very, very good second. I am extremely excited about getting him to Churchill Downs.
Well, and of course, going back to that 4-go, I didn't look at the Trackus data, but I'm going to guess that the lost ground had to be the difference.
Yeah, I believe he ran 31 feet farther than the winner. We were unlucky to get kind of shuffled out into the middle of the racetrack around the turn. I'm not sure exactly what the numbers are, but I think 31 feet equals something to you know, close to four lengths. But it's done. It's over with. And we look forward to loading him in the gate, obviously, on Saturday of Breeders' Cup Day.
Well, obviously, a big opportunity across so many different categories. Liam the Charmer looking a potential Breeders' Cup turf starter, paved for the filly and mare turf potentially, and just things going really well, Michael, and so deserved. Congratulations on the great weekend, and we'll look forward to seeing you in Louisville.
Thank you guys for having me. I enjoy it.
We enjoy having you. Michael McCarthy, you can follow him on Twitter, MWM. Racing is Michael McCarthy. Does a tremendous job and has really, really caught traction. And, you know, the early conversations we had when he was, you know, still trying to establish, you know, himself and lure potential clients, and you can see what has transpired. It's just, and there isn't anybody who knows him that isn't delighted for his success. Michael McCarthy. Let's take a break. Andy Serling going to join us. We've been about 10 minutes behind really all morning, and that was Amos's fault. Not me. It was Amos. We'll blame it on Tom. When Andy complains, I can say it was Amos. Hour three at the races. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get five full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for five of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.